Hey, that's how we do it.
Hey,
Welcome to
let's roll.
Cosmos
Oh,
with
all right, you're leading. Let's
Cosmos.
do this.
I know, I was just starting it in a very kind of a
Oh yeah,
fun,
what's
formal
the
way.
plan? I don't know the outline. Let's do this.
I know, well, it's on Google Drive,
Let's do
so
it
you
live.
have access to it as long as you have technology. Anyway, welcome everyone to Cosmos with Cosmos. I'm Liz.
I'm Mike, and I'm Brandon.
Hey, Brandon's with
Hey,
us.
how long has what was the last time I was on the show?
Oh God.
Maybe like,
It was the last season. I know that.
well, maybe like
Oh
three or four
my
shows ago. I don't know. It's been a
God.
while.
Yeah.
It's been quite some
I'm so
time.
sorry.
No, it's okay. You've been traveling the universe, as we can see. He's in a distant solar system right now, for those of you listening on the podcast. But anyway, we are beginning season four with a high in the sky an astronomy news episode. In fact, we're going to start doing one of these per month
Yeah,
this new
every other
season,
time.
so we can constantly talk about fresh astronomy news and what you can check out in
Fresh.
the nighttime sky. Yeah,
Like
fresh.
what? Like this astronomy news has popped its collar. It's just
It's
fresh.
fresh. It's fresh. Fresh off the farm.
Okay.
But of course, before we get started, it's Cosmos for a reason. So, Brandon, what are you drinking in faraway
Hey.
lands?
I should actually pour myself that drink. I am having Mars whiskey.
Mars
Let's
whiskey.
see if we can get a satisfying sound out of
Okay.
this. Was a door slam. Okay, maybe not.
No, well, it was a good attempt. It was a good attempt.
I heard
Tried.
the I
I
heard
tried.
the dinking of glass
Yeah,
on glass.
yeah. All right,
Yeah,
Mars
use your
whiskey.
imagination.
Mike, what do you have?
I am calling it the Cygnus, and it's just apple juice because they do have apple cider, but it's got apple cinnamon whiskey in it. I should probably
And
do the apple cinnamon whiskey.
but you don't want to drink too much of the Cygnus, otherwise you're gonna get the sickness.
Okay, well
Nice. You're
done.
welcome. That's what
So,
I
aren't
went
you
for.
glad I said Cygnus
Yes,
earlier?
yes,
Okay, you've
yes.
been waiting all
No,
along, right?
actually, no, I just came up with that.
Oh,
I just
but
thought of
I
it.
said it sounds like I said I'm gonna call it the Cygnus, but it sounds like Cygnus.
Oh, I didn't remember that. I am drinking a lovely, refreshing glass of Medusa's blood. And this is basically just what we like to call a sin almond berry, which is cranberry juice, cinnamon whiskey, and amaretto.
That's what's in it.
Medusa's blood sounds like a weapon from Elden Ring.
It Yeah,
does.
well,
It
I'm sure we
does.
will.
It's like
Yeah.
a potion or like grease you put on your sword. Anyway. All right, of course, follow us on all the things at Drinking Cosmos on Twitter and Cosmos with Cosmos everywhere else. And we have the shot with Cosmos every other Wednesday on YouTube and of course wherever you get your podcast, Spotify, Anchor.fm, whatnot.
Podcast.
And while you're browsing the interwebs listening to our shit, you can check out amazing talented artist Katie Davison, Wild Ixia, Wild IXIA on Etsy. Buy some of her shit. And our good friend Ron, check out the MrProctorShow.com. Or he has like Mr. Proctor Sucks. No. He didn't he
Oh
have like
yeah, there was another
another
one.
one
Oh, there was
that
another one.
I don't know. And then of course if you're in the Rolling Bluffs area of I can never remember. Is it
Iowa,
Nebraska?
Nebraska. It's like right on the
Right
border
on the
of.
border, you can check out the Rolling Bluffs Planetarium and see a cool show by fan of the show, Jack, who's drinking some good apple cider right now. Anyway,
Nice.
before we get started, of course, some rules. If we make any Lord of the Rings or Star Wars references, take a shot because we're nerds. And rarely
I just
happens
watched Star Wars
now
yesterday.
if any dogs
We
bark.
know. We see it on Plex. We know exactly where you are and what you're watching too.
Anyway, if any dogs bark, take a drink as well.
Has anybody watched Andor? We watched. Did you watch?
Look,
Have
this
you?
is hangover
No.
material. All right, let's not get too.
Let's just jump right
Brandon comes
into it.
back, and we're immediately off
Let's get to the
track.
hangover, folks.
Might as well at
Look,
this
some
point.
stuff's happening
No,
in space. We'll see you next time. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
first, we got to start off before we got to get high in the sky. So let's check out some stuff that is up now in the evening sky, because obviously if it's daytime, you're just going to see the sun and occasionally the moon. So, and you don't want to look directly at the sun without special equipment. So
yeah, moon's pretty old right now. So nice, real thin crescent. So you're not going to see it with the sun up.
So we're going to go to the evening sky.
Evening sky, right after sunset.
And there are some planets hanging out. I like Brandon's little dance.
I'm pointing to the planets.
Okay. Oh yeah, that's right. They're behind you. For those of you listening, he's got planets behind him. There are three planets visible in the sky throughout the night. Jupiter, low in the east in the early evening. Bright. It's very bright. It's mm-hmm. the third brightest, fourth brightest. Which is brighter, Venus or Jupiter? I can't Venus. Remember now. So fourth brightest
Sun,
object.
Moon, Venus.
That's right. So it's the fourth brightest object in the evening sky. And on Monday, September 26th, which if you're listening to this, this has already happened, but Jupiter will be / was at opposition.
Oh, nice.
So it's in its farthest.
What does that mean?
It's in its farthest.
The antagonist in the solar system.
It's at a place in its orbit where it's at, it's the farthest away from us.
Closest.
Opposite.
Oh, God damn it.
Basically. Basically, opposition is when whatever it is opposite sun and sky.
Okay.
So Jupiter, as the sun sets, Jupiter rises, and it's we are the closest to it.
The closest, man. See, this is why you're here, to remember correctly facts. All right. So then, a little bit above Jupiter is a
big,
beautiful ringed planet, Saturn. It's yellowish.
Mm-hmm.
But not as bright as Jupiter, but still fairly bright up there. And then Mars will rise late in the evening. Of course, in the east, everything rises in the east. So later in the evening,
Mars.
Look for a reddish object. And these planets, they'll all be in a line. They'll all follow the same path, the path of the sun, a.k.a. The plane of our solar system.
Also known as?
So
The ecliptic.
So the Earth is not flat, but the solar system is.
Nope, the Earth's Mars. Flat. That's just science, Brandon.
Yeah,
a lot has changed since the last time you tried this.
Man, yeah, you know, I guess so.
The flat Earth episode might have been the last one.
Oh, maybe. Okay, it is going to be high in the sky before dawn.
Hey, I see what you did there. That's well done.
And it's going to actually start brightening as it's actually getting closer to Earth.
Oh, nice.
In its orbit, so it's going to start getting
nice.
Getting brighter. So you can look for that. And then, very hard planet to spot is the smallest planet in the solar system. Little Mercury. It's closest to the sun, so it hangs out close to the sun, so it can be it's either like setting right after sunset or rising right before sunrise. And so it's going to be like really low in the dawn sky, kind of just above the horizon. But the second week or so into October is when you're going to be able to like really see it and actually be able to distinguish
okay.
it.
So I think,
I guess,
go ahead.
I guess at dawn, look to the east.
Take a drink.
Oh no, where's my drink logo? I don't have my drink logo on this OBS setup.
I don't have the sound then.
So the next time in the sky, we'll talk about it some more.
Yes. Because we'll be into October, so.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So those are the planets.
Oh, shit, we will be.
We will be into October. Isn't that weird, everybody? It's almost, we have Halloween decorations up already. So excited.
You know what she does in a week? She jumps out of a plane.
Oh, I go skydiving in 1 week.
You skydiving?
Oh, yeah.
Saturday.
He bought me a skydive for my birthday.
That's so cool.
Yeah, so on Saturday.
Let's talk about that later on.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway. Maybe this is why it's good Brandon's always on assignment.
All right, you're in charge.
All right, okay, we got constellations. Constellations, ooh, patterns of stars in the sky. Constellations are kind of the official ones, but you have other patterns that are part of them that people like to just give names to.
Like the ice cream out. Cone.
I know, yes, ice cream cone. Or Bootes.
Or the Big Dipper.
Oh my God. One time it happened where I called the Big Dipper the Big Dicker. Oh, that was a good time. All right. So low in the south in the early evening is going to be a big pattern of stars that looks like a letter J or a fishing hook. And that is Scorpius.
Scorpius.
Scorpion. It's a summertime constellation. So it is, it's going to be going away where we won't be able to see it at night pretty soon. So it's low in the early evening. And there's a bright red star at its heart. And that is Antares.
Antares, rival of Mars.
Yes, rival of Mars. I forgot about that.
Mm-hmm. Rival of Brandon's drink.
Because people are like, it's red, Mars is red, but we know it's not Mars, so anti-Mars.
Mm-hmm. They get close to each other in the sky once in a while. It's kind of cool to see.
Yeah, they have a little, it's like a little, Mars, duel. Anti-Mars. Duel of fates. Yeah, exactly. It's like battling a twin, you know?
Yeah.
Finding a twin for which twin will reign supreme.
I just made the Star Wars reference. I'm sorry.
Did you all?
Oh, what was your reference?
I said Duel of Fates.
Mm. Dang it. Man, the one time I don't have the button is the one time we need it. All right. Now, after sunset, high in the sky.
Okay, new rule. Every time Lynn says high in the sky, take a drink.
I didn't even notice it that time.
This is like the second or third day.
Well, everything's high in the sky. High overhead is
Mike jumping from a plane.
Are three bright stars that form a triangle, and this is known as the summer triangle.
But
and
we're in fall.
Well, we just started fall, so we're heading into fall. So it will start setting to the west earlier and earlier as we head deeper into fall. And this triangle, these three bright stars, they're each the brightest star in their own constellation. The summer triangle is an asterism. That's just a shape that we just are like, hey, it's a triangle, guys. But the brightest stars belong to the official constellations of Cygnus the Swan, Lyra the Harp, and Aquila the Eagle. And those stars are Vega, Altair, and Deneb.
Right.
Deneb being in Cygnus, Vega in Lyra, and Altair in Aquila the Eagle.
Vega's an important star to astronomers.
Vega is an important star. I don't know if it's what I'm thinking of, but I'm going to let you say yours first, and then I will agree with whatever it is.
They use it to basically set brightnesses for other stars.
Oh, yes.
So
it's like some kind of standard brightness.
It has
candle?
No. It's yes and no. Its brightness is a standard for other stars. Okay. What were you going to say?
It's like the gold standard.
That in like 12,000 years is going to be the closest star to the North Pole because of the Earth wobbles on its axis.
Precession,
And one wobble takes 26,000 years. Wow. And so now we have Polaris as the closest star to the North
Pole. Which isn't all that bright.
But in like 12,000 years, that wobble of the Earth is going to make it Vega as the closest star.
And Vega is really quite bright.
It's bright, and it's going to be further away from true, like, exact North Celestial Pole. So, as the course of over the course of the evening, you'll actually be able to see it make a little circle.
As the world turns.
World turns.
Hey, my grandmother's stories with Days of Our Lives. We're not going to do this as the world turns.
I just watched Days of Our Lives when I was in middle school.
Pop culture, though. Vega. Alien signal comes from Vega in the movie Contact.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, I thought that's where you were going, honestly.
Okay,
yeah,
so we all had equally, some good...
And we all know radio astronomers go and they put on their headphones and sit on the hoods of their cars and listen. They tie directly into whatever the radio telescope is and they hear sounds.
It's just like FM.
whatever.
Probably more like AM at that point, but yeah.
Yeah. All right, now, if you're trying to find these constellations. Something that's very handy that we always promote is like, you know, a sky map application on your phone, because that can mm-hmm. point you in the right direction. But for these constellations, let's see, Lyra looks like a little fish.
Shape. Oh, see, I always think it looks like a little tie.
A little, oh, like a necktie, like a sideways
yeah.
necktie?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So you got a little top knot
yeah.
thing. And then the,
I can see that. I can see that. And it's the smallest of the three.
It's got the Ring Nebula in it, which is cool.
It is.
Oh, very cool.
Oh, I can't wait till James Webb gets... Okay, anyway, all right. then Cygnus the Swan kind of looks like a T or an X. Ish shape in the sky, like a kind of a T.
Looks like a cross up there.
A cross, yeah.
Isn't it known as, it's known as Northern Cross.
Is it known as the Northern Cross?
Yeah, so Cygnus has got the Northern Cross in it.
Oh, shit.
So it has the cross, and then...
And the Northern Cross being an asterism.
Yeah, and then coming off of the horizontal beam of Jesus' death rack, are finishes off the rings of
death
Cygnus.
Rack.
I like that.
That's your metal band right there.
Jesus' death rack.
Jesus'
death rack of Christ.
Oh, I thought of a really good band name the other day.
Yeah.
Aviation Variation.
Aviation Variation. What genre of band is that?
Probably, so I'm going to stick on brand here and go Christian rock.
Oh. All right. Let's do that. Okay, and then Aquila the Eagle. Aquila kind of looks like a kite, or like maybe a stingray.
Oh, stingray.
It has
it
has these kind of like two triangular kind of lobes
from it. Definitely looks like a stingray. Just think of it like a stick figure outline of a stingray, mm-hmm. and you got it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But you can imagine whatever the fuck you want up there, because, you know.
There are no rules in space.
There are no rules.
No, but you know,
Cygnus, there are, but don't worry about it.
Back to Cygnus. First black hole was found in Cygnus.
That's right.
Cygnus X1.
Cygnus X1.
X1.
Yeah.
All right. So that's going to be overhead. But looking to the north, you'll be able to find a W shape. Wait.
That's north.
Is it?
Yeah, that's north.
Okay. I'm so, I'm disoriented.
But you are amazing at driving and getting us places.
I can't see the sky to orient.
And I suck at it, but...
Cassiopeia looks like a big W in the sky. And it's going to be high in the northeast after the sun sets. Basically the right-hand side is the brightest side, and it's going to be tilted upwards.
Okay,
and so
a giant squiggly in the sky.
Giant squiggly. Just look for a W up there. You know, it pretty much stands out, especially in a city area where you can't see, or you can only see kind of the brightest stars up there. It's really easily identifiable.
I wonder
there's
how
not
many stars I can
it.
See here. And Long Island.
So when I was in Manhattan this was in wintertime, and so I went outside. I saw like four or five stars. And winter is home to the brightest stars.
Yeah.
In the sky. And so only four or five. It was.
So basically you saw a Sirius.
Yeah, and basically probably the outline of Orion. Just the four corners of Orion. And that was it. Yeah, and so the wintertime has all these bright stars in it, and I was like, you know what? I can appreciate Phoenix, the sky of Phoenix, much better now, because it was insane. Because you have the humidity, you have the light pollution, you have all of that, and it just conspires against you in New York. That's my sidecar. My sidetrack.
Well, it's very true, but I mean, most of the stuff we're talking about and describing is stuff that you can find in a city area because it has the brighter stars. And whereas if you go out into a dark sky area where there's away from the light pollution, it actually, even for us, it is really overwhelming because the sky is littered with stars. So even finding the most basic ones was like, wait a minute, where? Yeah. And then you can, and then your brain starts to kind of be able to see it, but it's just overwhelming the vastness of clutter of stars that are
exactly first time that like we went to Alamo Lake State Park for a sky event.
That just, was my first time really seeing the night sky,
and I was lost for a bit. It was beautiful and insane. I'm sorry, Brandon, what were you gonna say?
Oh no, that phrase, the sky's littered with stars. I think that's the only time "litter" is a good word.
Yes, the only time that "litter" is acceptable when it's
yeah.
a night sky littered with stars.
If you can get away from any city, street lights, whatever, and just look up, it's just an amazing experience.
So I remember applying for jobs in Antarctica for over the winter because you get stuck there and you can't leave. But just because I wanted to see the night sky.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, you would also be able to see the largest small imagined clouds. When I went to when I went to New Zealand, there was an opportunity to go to the observatory and to look at all this stuff. But I had a War of the Worlds meeting, and I couldn't do it. I couldn't go, and it was cloudy for the rest of the trip. I never got to see the large and small Magellanic clouds or anything like that.
That's like going to Alaska and not seeing the Northern Lights.
God damn it, I know. That was just really poor planning on my part anyway. But...
Well, no, but it's the time that we could go, but it's also, you can't really go in the summertime.
Yeah.
But... Yeah, so it just didn't work out for us. But, the future, who knows? The great undiscovered country, as Star Trek likes to call it. So, nice. Or at least for one movie. And so,
Star Trek's not a rule.
Nope.
That's good.
Star Wars.
Speaking of cloudy skies, winter is coming. It's on its way. Yeah. So early in the early pre-dawn morning hours, when you're going to be sleeping,
it's when the White Walkers are showing up.
And that's
winter is coming.
That's when the wintertime constellations Taurus, Orion, Sirius begin to rise. But we'll talk about those once we get closer to them being up a little bit.
I do
before bedtime.
I do love being able to see Orion when we go for our morning walk / run. Because more walking for me than running.
Or just taking Leia out to go potty at like 3 in the morning. I'm like, I look up and I'm like, oh.
There it is.
He's there. He's coming.
Cool. It's a good centering constellation. Like, I know what this is. I feel good about it.
It is. All right. Well, that's what's high in the sky so far. So we'll come on back down to Earth with some latest astronomy news.
But what's happening? Really? Are we really coming back down to Earth? Maybe in the vicinity of Earth, with at least some of this news.
Okay. All right.
So what's news?
Well, it's what's going on? It's in the notes, man.
All right, well.
I see the notes.
All right.
Right here. I was trying to segue for our audience.
All right, we'll start with the most obvious piece of news that has been a frequent thing, and that is James Webb. Space Telescope.
Yep.
Images.
Man, this shit's gonna come down fast.
Oh my god.
Hard.
And specifically the ones because the Tarantula Nebula was beautiful. But really, Jupiter and Neptune, these images look so cool. Like,
oh my god, the Neptune image is just gorgeous. Gorgeous.
I mean, the last time we got such a good look at Neptune was when Voyager flew past. And Voyager's view of the rings were ringlets.
Yeah.
And so you had these little ring arcs. And we knew that it was a full ring. Mm-hmm. I mean, just from a physics standpoint, the odds of it being just little ring arcs is exceedingly low. It's not zero, but it's exceedingly low.
Is anything ever zero? Anyway, topic for the Hangover.
All right, and so to be able to see those full rings with James Webb, it's just amazing.
Yes, I know. It's so clear and, like, it's just like, whoa.
It's beautiful. Oh, it's beautiful. It's to the point where now I'm just like, I'm going to change my desktop background image just once a week to whatever James Webb has coming out.
And Neptune, seeing its ring so clearly, and you can see some of its moons there as well.
Oh, and also some of the clouds.
Yeah. I mean, it's really just, these are just gorgeous pictures of just our neighbors.
Yeah, so just Google James Webb, Neptune. Just Google James Webb Space Telescope
you won't be disappointed. I mean,
no,
if you are, then
you know what? These are going to be, to me, these are going to be on par beauty wise that we're seeing with Juno and Jupiter. Just,
you think so?
Yeah, I think so many of these are going to be works of art. Juno, it just to me is just space art. It is space art.
It's like classical art.
The Van Gogh of the solar system.
Yeah.
It really is. And so if you really want to see some amazing images,
it's like museum art gallery. So are the ones that are Jupiter and Neptune. They got like this like retro vintage vibe to them, or like kind of like a
coloring.
And I want to get both of those printed and framed.
Yeah. And so when you look at Kleina Nebula, from James Webb, it's just, that is also a piece of art. And so the universe is providing you art that you can put on your wall,
which Brandon does have printed and framed.
Yeah, and like almost immediately you got it printed. And so
yeah, it was like the next day. Like, holy shit!
Yeah, and it's just absolutely just stunning. It's really stunning. And then that's not even the science. We're not even like talking science.
No, we're just looking at the sparkles.
Yeah.
Right now.
But there's a whole group of people that are looking at the science behind the sparkles.
Punching away on the computers, doing a bunch of math on a whiteboard.
Yeah. And then like with the Carina Nebula, there's shit in that picture. They're like, we don't know what this is. We have no idea. But it's going to be fun figuring it out.
Let's hope they never find like the Borg. Anyway,
well, I guess that's introduced to us by Q, isn't it? So we got some time.
Okay, but speaking,
did you change the timeline?
Speaking of what astronomers have detected, are hot gas bubbles swirling around the Milky Way's supermassive black hole.
Ooh, cool.
This study, or this observations, were made by the Atacama Large Millimeter Submillimeter Array.
In Chile.
In Chile, Atacama Desert. Mm-hmm. And basically, what they think they're looking at is this like a hot bubble of gas that's just orbiting around the black hole. I'm not going to hit the microphone. We're good. Zipping around it. That is similar in size to that of the planet Mercury.
Okay. Right.
But making a full loop in just about 70 minutes.
This shit's close.
So that means it's going 30% of the speed of light.
It's insane.
Wow.
It's insane.
So it's
fast.
Right. It's
okay,
there.
So when you... Well, all right, I was thinking that this is more distant. So here's the thing. I briefly looked at these notes, and then I was just basically to see what the themes were. Uh-huh. And then I'm like, you know what? I'm just gonna we're gonna doll up this, and I'm gonna. Yeah, that is insane. So I was thinking that these bubbles are like really far, the black hole and just extending like light years away.
Oh, you thought they were like more of like the lobes?
These lobes, but no, these are bubbles that are nearby.
Yeah, that are like...
So these bubbles have, you know, lots of space in them, obviously, being bubbles of that size of Mercury. I wonder then how many Skittles you can put in them.
How many Skittles?
How many Skittles?
Well...
To fit inside one of these.
I have written a JavaScript for that. I can tell you later on. I just need to turn on my computer.
Oh my gosh. All right. So some of these observations of them were done shortly after a burst or flare of X-ray energy was emitted.
Okay.
That these kinds of flares that were previously observed with infrared telescopes are thought to be associated with these hot spots, hot gas bubbles, and the observations confirm previous discoveries made by the gravity instrument at ESO's Very Large Telescope, or VLT, because we call it like it is, which is fine. Observes in the infrared, and they both suggest the flare originates in a clump of gas swirling around the black hole, and with the orbit of the hotspot being nearly face on to, I don't know,
us,
I'm assuming, maybe.
Okay.
It's kind of funny because, as so often is the case, we see these like huge supernova events, stars out there. And they still exist, even though they're really far away, 30,000, 60,000 light years away. But in this case, because the gas bubble is so close to the black hole, it just doesn't exist anymore.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, we're seeing as it was 25, 26,000 years ago.
Right. So it just kind of makes me happy that typically you look out in space, all those things are still there. But in this case, it's not there.
Oh yeah, it's gone now.
I mean, the radiation emanating from the
space accretion disk is a literal space ghost.
So then, I guess the question is like, because the article didn't really what causes it. What is, how are the, you know, what's, do they
space indigestion?
Is it just some black hole?
Well, I mean, the thing is, it's like, so with the first time you're seeing something, you can't say if they come and go. You really have no idea. Mm-hmm. The only thing you can do is to look at it more.
Yeah.
With more observations and see how it changes with time.
Yeah.
And then that changes, because this is how fucking science works.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Observation. So theory influences observation, which then influences theory, which then influences observation. This is just amazingly beautiful feedback loop that happens. But, you know, they can't. So are you holding a planet in your hand?
I actually thought you were holding something.
I've been playing with this for a while. I can also put the glass up and make it look like I'm just holding liquid.
For those of you listening, just watch the YouTube video so you can watch Brayden just have fun with digital green screen work.
The only way that you're able to really figure this stuff out is through more observation. Right now we probably don't know what the hell this is and how it forms, but we're looking for it now, and more observations will give us a better understanding. But you know, for those dudes that are looking at it 26,000 years from now, they ain't gonna see it.
But we'll hopefully maybe have figured it out by then.
Poor dudes.
Now, in other news, a bizarre fast radio burst came from a binary star system.
Binary.
For more about binary stars, check out our episode on binary
stars. Our solar system is a non-binary system.
It is a non-binary system.
Which is a good thing.
Very good.
So more than 15 years after fast radio bursts, or FRBs, were discovered, there's been new research that has both unraveled and deepened the mystery of these sources, of the sources of these deep space phenomena.
So, all right, let's just kind of break apart that statement.
Yes.
So it has unraveled.
Yeah, this came from a CNN article, so quotes to CNN.
All right, CNN. Answer me this riddle. So it has unraveled the riddle, but it has also deepened the mystery.
Yeah, because they've learned something. No, it's like every time we learn something
it's
about
like
space.
A donut hole has, in fact, another hole inside of it.
But
you know, it's like we've had some questions answered, but then we also are like, what the fuck?
Okay, but that, to me, when you unravel the mystery, you've pretty much solved it.
Well, it's like when you're trying to untangle a really thin necklace, you get part of it, like the top comes undone, but somehow the bottom keeps getting more entangled, and you're like, when will I untangle this?
And I mean, if you unravel something, that something still exists, just in a different form, so it's still a mystery, just unraveled.
You know what? Let's take Brandon's word for it because he has writing background. And
we're high in the sky here. So, hey, man, if you unravel a thing, it still exists. But it's still a mystery.
But according to Buddhism, nothing exists. It's called emptiness.
So, recent research suggests that some of these FRBs originate from Magnetars, which I just find a magical name of like a highly magnetic star, Magnetar.
Great personality.
I think Magnetar was referenced. There's a Nirvana song that I don't know. What? Yeah, but anyway.
A Magnetar?
Yeah, I think so. Anyway.
Kurt Cobain came out with Magnetar?
No, but the word Magnetar.
Is he Brian May?
Is in a Nirvana song.
I could see Brian May. Yeah.
So, in 2020, there was a fast radio burst found in our galaxy that was associated with Magnetar. This FRB, with a long number, 20201124A, occurred for 82 hours over 54 days in the spring of 2021. God damn it. Brandon, you what are you doing? Brandon's messing with the notes now. Everybody, just let it go. this is the downfall of shared technology. Okay, so
I'd rather have him messing with the notes than watching a Phoenix Suns basketball game while we're doing.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Podcast. All right, so the measurements went up and down during that time period, and then they stopped during that. Last 18 days
before the FRB dampened.
So basically, this suggests that the magnetic field strength and/or density along the lines in the vicinity of the FRB source are varying with time.
Oh shit!
Neat.
Mm-hmm. So that the area of the FRB is like dynamically evolving, and so there's rapidly changing magnetic fields or density or both that's happening here.
Well, that's interesting because you would think that a star would not change its magnetic field that quick over 18 days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a very quick change for a very large thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's like instantaneous.
You gotta have a lot. There's a lot of turbulent shit happening.
Well, yeah, but still, to have a change like that over 18 days is that's fast. Aliens. That's fast. That is like the Earth losing its entire magnetic field in 18 days.
Oh, God.
That's bad news, folks.
That's
the Earth's core decides, hey, we're not going to turn anymore. We're done.
I'm done 18 churning. Days. This is a strike.
This is our 18-day notice. In 18 days.
No churn, no burn.
We're done.
As the world turns, can never go off air.
I like that you brought it back again. That was great.
It's not my grandmother's story.
So there's a physical model that a different team of researchers made. Based on these observations, proposes that the FRB actually came from a binary system about over 8,000 light years away, containing a magnetar and a capital B little E star, a BE star.
So a B star.
Yeah. So it's like it's going to be a star that's a little bit larger, a little bit hotter than our sun.
I really hope it's yellow. I really hope it's yellow, and with sunspots, so it looks like a B.
It's not going to be yellow. It's going to be more blue. Whitish blue.
Or white. It's going to be more white.
But I can still hope.
You can always hope. And that the radio burst complex magnetized environment is within about an astronomical unit. 1 AU. That's the distance between the Earth and the Sun. 93 million miles.
Or about 150 million kilometers.
That's...
Because we have an international audience.
Okay. All right. Okay. Thank you for... accommodating them.
Yeah.
Okay.
How many Skittles is that?
It's a lot of Skittles.
Of fucking Skittles.
42 astronomical Skittle units.
And then there's some information that we're confused by because of how it reads, implicating that this is not in our galaxy. That maybe from a barred spiral galaxy. These observations are from the Keck telescope in Mauna Kea.
In a galaxy far away.
And so suggesting that that the source is between the spiral arms where no significant star formation is taking place, making it less likely the origin is solely a magnetar. So that's actually confirming that it would be a binary, the binary system. But so we're a little bit confused by the reading of this of like, is it in our galaxy or is it outside of our galaxy? So,
all right,
that's still pretty cool shit.
Oh, that's really cool shit.
All right, Brandon's excited about talk about some things, but before we get to Brandon's, we have one more thing that we'll bring up, and then we'll let Brandon get real nerdy about rockets.
As if all of this has not been nerdy.
I know. Okay,
this
so,
whole podcast is just nerdy.
Last exciting news, this will already have happened if you're listening to it or watching it later than today, but tomorrow, Monday, September 26th, NASA's DART spacecraft is going to slam into an asteroid. That's what it was designed for.
Pow!
It's going to go kaboom into this asteroid.
Well, it's going to go.
Yes.
Actually, sorry, it's going to go.
Because there's no sound in space. the tiny asteroid Dimorphos at 7:14 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time.
Okay, what time?
7:14 p.m. This is something that's never been. We'll pour one out for DART. Pour one down my tummy for DART.
I will be celebrating that my workshop is over.
There you go.
So.
And basically, the goal of it is, which has never been done before, is to help us learn how to prevent asteroids from slamming into us. And maybe if we slam things into them first, they'll be like, "All right," and move away a little. And miss us. So that's really the goal in a nutshell.
We don't want to mess with that planet. We don't want to mess
They're
with
like,
it.
Yeah, oh,
those people are crazy.
Cool out. All right. We'll just go around.
We will move over a little bit. So the goal is to actually move the asteroid.
The goal is to move the asteroid, basically. And that it will basically cut. It's an asteroid that's in orbit around another asteroid. It's a binary asteroid.
So this is finally the asteroid redirect mission.
Yes.
It's a deep cut for you guys out there.
And so it will actually cut its orbital time around its parent asteroid, Didymos, by a few minutes.
So it's going to hit it from behind.
So it's going to hit it from behind, speed it up, shorten its orbit, and that will demonstrate that we can affect the orbit of a body in space. So saying that we can move shit out of the way.
Actually, hit it from the front and slow it down, which will make it move in a little bit closer.
That cuts its orbit because it moves in closer. Because the closer you are to your
orbit. I was thinking time wise.
Okay, so it's gonna slam into Dimorphos at a speed of just under 4 miles per second, or 14,400 miles per hour, or 23,200 kilometers per hour.
Yeah, for our international folks.
Because
we're the only ones who do this miles per hour stuff.
So here's the issue with this. As amazing as this will be, and a lot of information gained from it, that the complete analysis of this is going to take years, and that... the ESA is going to launch another spacecraft, Hera, in 2024 to then further investigate the long-term effects of the DART impact. So it's going to take a long time for us to really get an understanding of
what happened
and what we can achieve and all that kind of stuff.
But it's going to benefit us in the very long run.
Unless an asteroid gets to us first.
Which, you know... We don't need asteroids. We're killing ourselves here.
That's true. Maybe they're like, you know what? They got it handled.
We'll let them do it.
If they start all holding hands and singing together, then we'll send someone in. But
so is that what the dinosaurs were doing? They did this whole kumbaya moment.
And yeah, they were.
They're like holding
they
hands.
They were thriving, and everyone was benefiting.
Yeah. They had universal health coverage.
Pretty much. I mean, it's kind of...
I mean, they're called asteroids because they're just a bunch of asses.
Yeah. All right. Brandon, tell us about rockets.
Excellent.
Rocket
Apparently
news
I
with
get
Brandon.
So, of course, we have the big giant space launch system for the Artemis mission still sitting on the pad. It has not gone to space yet, like it was supposed to 10 years ago, and then 8 years ago, and then last week, and the week before that. and currently, we are unsure whether it's going to stay on the pad or if it's going to come back to the VAB, because there's a big giant storm barreling.
What's a VAB? Nobody knows what a VAB is.
Vehicle Assembly Building.
Vertical Assembly
Building.
That's where they would stack the old rockets, and it's kind of where they assemble it. So it's currently on the pad, and it just went through some tests the other day for refueling its liquid hydrogen, because when it was first supposed to launch, that fuel kept leaking out of the hose, which is less than ideal.
Yeah, you don't want that.
So we ran some tests, NASA did, and they got that problem mostly fixed now, so it's all set.
Mostly.
So instead of launching Tuesday, it'll launch some other time. If it gets pushed back into the VAB, the VAB, it will be launched sometime in October.
Yeah, so... Okay. Yeah, I mean, there's like a hurricane that's...
Threatening.
That's going to be heading towards Florida, right? That's the reason why they want to move it back to the VAB.
Yes, you don't want it to be, accidentally fall over like a Jenga
stack. Why is Florida the best place to launch from when it's not at an ideal location in terms of weather?
Orbital dynamics. You want to be really close to the hemisphere.
I mean, you want to be really close to what?
The equator.
Yeah.
You
got to be really close to the hemisphere.
I was like, what? That was the equator.
But there are batteries that will need to be replaced on the space launch system at this point, so it'll be pushed back even more, and it's a whole thing. So it's just a delightful time
dragging it out, at this point. They're just like, let's just build as much. Yeah, just drag it out as long as we can.
Yeah, but the problem with with that though is I realize that they're not really doing that. But there's this whole segment of the population that's going, NASA can't launch it. They can't launch it.
Yeah,
that's saying that. Who's saying that? Let me see him.
Let's look at.
They all voted for Trump.
You don't want.
Oh my God! Forget all about what he said about NASA. That made me so angry.
What? Ghosts? There's ghosts.
What is going on?
Space ghosts.
Coast to coast. All right. What else? What? Any more on? What else you got?
I can just make some stuff up.
Keep going.
The Delta Four had its.
You had like 80,000 rockets launched on the West Coast.
Oh, its last launch.
What's the last
launch? On the West Coast?
On the West Coast.
The Delta Four rocket. That's its last launch on the West Coast, and it will be slowly retiring. I don't know when this last launch is, but yeah, it'll be retired.
Why are they retiring it?
Because they're gearing up for the next rocket. The Vulcan rocket.
Vulcan.
Oh, nice.
The Vulcan.
Okay.
Yeah.
The planet that does not exist, and Star Trek, Race of People.
Yeah. I don't know if you needed to clarify that.
No, we did. We did.
Well, that's cool.
The latter, probably not. The former, yeah.
Now, you also said something about Roscosmos made an official date, or are we making a joke?
Oh, yeah. So, this was like a month ago or something like that. But we haven't done the High in the Sky in quite some time. So, all this is news. they're officially pulling out the International Space Station around
2028.
So, which is probably, 2028. So, we've got a few good years left on station. And we'll see what happens after that.
All right, when were they planning to retire the ISS itself?
Originally or now?
Now,
2030s?
Yeah, 2028, 2030 was the idea. But of course, you can always try to extend, see how it goes. But Russia's like, nah, which makes sense because they don't really have the money to do anything.
Yeah,
at the
they should stop being assholes. But, it is Russia.
All the people are trying to leave Russia now, though.
All right, well, and then for this High in the Sky, before we close it on out and head on to the hangover, is just a little in memoriam to the astronomy world. And this is a cheers to Martin Schmidt. He was
Martin
the
Schmidt.
First astronomer to identify a quasar, and he died at 92.
Cheers, Martin.
So cheers, Martin.
Wow.
Well done.
Cheers.
quasars, quasi-stellar objects. So they look like stars, but they're not stars. They're super distant galaxies that are like have a high
luminosity
to them.
What
so they're brighter. They're really brighter than they should be at their distance.
Right, you're looking at the core. So they're very active galaxies.
They got a black hole that's munching the fuck away.
They're munching the fuck away.
They got the major munchies.
If we're writing a scientific paper, can we write that? Yes. Say this black hole is just
munching the fuck away.
Munching the fuck away right now.
And then it's quoted
and
in another paper.
This black hole is thirsty.
In parentheses, Davis and George.
Yeah. 2022.
So he discovered this object about 2.4 billion light years away, 3C273.
Can you say that in like the good astronomy voice? Isn't there like a sexy astronomy voice?
That's
like,
Mike does the sexy astronomy voice.
I do not do the sexy astronomy voice.
3C273.
I'm not saying that.
All right. Can you do it in an Irish accent?
What?
I don't know.
I have a hard enough time with the American accent.
So this became
this quasar.
Oh, that's so bad. It was one of the most distant objects in the universe from Earth at that time that had been seen. I thought this was fun. He was an adamant atheist, but when the editors of the book Origins, The Lives and Worlds of Modern Cosmologists in 1990, came out, they asked him how, if he were God, he would have designed the universe, and he gladly took up the challenge, apparently. He said, "I would have constructed a bigger universe. I think the universe is small."
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
I love that. I also want The Lives and Worlds of Modern Cosmologists to be a reality TV show.
Oh my
God. Throw a bunch of cosmologists together in a house. It's like Real World.
That could actually be quite.
And it's just them being really antisocial and staying in their own computers.
Yeah. They're just constantly doing research. Just reading and just research.
And you know what? We would watch it. We would completely watch it.
Oh, 100%. We get like really attached.
Uh-huh.
And then there's a Twitter account out there called Observatory Cats. So we just throw cats in there with them.
Oh my gosh, yes. That would be beautiful. That would be beautiful. All right, well, that was this episode of High in the Sky for, I guess,
Episode 1, season 4.
Yeah, kicking it out.
Season 4. So what's episode 2, season 4, going to be?
We haven't decided on that yet.
Antimatter. Anti-time.
Antimatter.
Can we do that?
We haven't done antimatter.
Okay. We'll figure it out. But anyway, follow us on all the things in the meantime. Twitter at Drinking Cosmos.
All the things.
Cosmos everywhere else. And you can watch us or listen to us on YouTube or on Spotify, FM, anywhere you get your podcasts. And hang out. If you're with us now, hang out with us on The Hangover. And we'll see you next time, everyone.
Cheers, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you.